February 18, 1991, 3 p.m., Hearing Room 357, House Committee on Judiciary, Subcommittee on Family Justice.
The February 18, 1991 meeting of the full House Judiciary Committee will come to order. The chair moves the introduction of the following bills en banc. Be patient, please. LC drafts, and I won't include LC in the description for the record. LC 1192, 1255, 1585, 1773, 1867, 2178, 2315, 2731, 3020, 3028, 3045, 3049, 3050, 3099, 3109, 3140, 3150, 3152, 3153, 3154, 3155, 3156, 3157, 3159, 3571, 3401, 3160, 3161, 3162, 3164, 3244, 3277, 3287, 3402, 3454, 3604, 3605, 3606, 3607, 3608, 3609, 3610, 3611, 3612, 3613, 3471, 3570, 3550, 3338, 3549, 3572, 3450, 3334, 3335, 3336, 3478, 3482, 3375, and 3376 on the first sheet, on the second sheet, 3446, 3452, 3457, 3451, 3456. Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Representative Bryan has a question.
I was getting it as fast as I could, and I missed two. I was wondering if you could
go back through those real quickly.
No. Any objection?
I have a question about section 3 on 3049.
Council, we'll talk to you later. Any objection? Very not. Should we adjourn?
The full committee is adjourned.
Subcommittee on Family Justice will come to order. We have two bills on schedule for work session today. House Bill 2407, House Bill 2413. And it's the intention of the chair to move into work session on both of those eventually and see if we can't clean them and polish them and get them ready for the full committee. I think, since I expect 2407 to take us a little bit longer than 2413, that we probably ought to open with that. That's the registration bill. Before we do that, though, I wanted to... before we're done today, I would like to ask the committee to co-sign a letter that I asked council to draft. You might remember two of the folks who testified last week on these bills. One came up from Medford and one was from Colton, I believe, both of whom had fairly dramatic stories and both of whom I think showed quite a bit of courage in coming before the committee. I asked council to draft letters of appreciation from the committee that just stated how much we appreciated how helpful their testimony was, and I'm going to ask the subcommittee members to co-sign that letter with me, and council will have copies of that letter later on.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative
Bell. I have the name and address of the gal from Salem also.
Okay. Although I think she's coming back. Okay. House Bill 2407, the registration bill. Most of you, I think, have received a short but fairly thoughtful... No? All right. In your packet is a short but thoughtful memo that council prepared or had prepared. Committee had some questions about proportionality in terms of the sentence. And it's a memo that talks, it's about halfway back in your packet from Linda Grimm in the research office. And it talks about what other states do, including it's got a table there. Three or four pages back, and I'm going to let the committee stand at ease for about two or three minutes and ask you to review that memo.
It's got to be on here,
because I do think it's helpful in giving us a little bit of background. So if you will take the next couple of minutes to look over that memo, we'll stand at ease for just a minute. Okay, I think it's fairly clear the direction that the memo goes. Council, can you describe what all is in the packet, including what's at the very back? It looks like Section 6 and where that came from.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the first thing that you'll find in your House Bill 2407 packet is the fiscal impact statement. Current indications are that there's an unknown fiscal impact. That basically it's kind of too soon to tell. There's a copy of the bill. Following that is something that we have not seen a lot of this session, but which was required beginning last session, which is a prison impact statement. For those of you that have not seen something like this yet, they are produced by the Criminal Justice Council. This is the kind of impact statement that we will be getting, Representative Parks, on the statute of limitations bill. So it gives you some sense of where they're coming from. The purpose of a prison impact statement is to primarily give the legislative body an idea of whether or not the new crimes that they're committing or amending are going to have a significant impact on bed space. I think the bottom line is that it's kind of too soon to tell. What I thought was somewhat telling, I don't want to say telling, I think the most salient fact to me in reading this was that this was a sort of a postscript sentence, which was after the first year of sex offender registration in Washington State, for example, 43% had not complied. This memo does point out, and the committee might want to keep this in mind, top of the second page of the memo, page 2, that first, although rates of failure to register and keep residency records are likely to be high, and then they quote the Washington statute, under current law, all felony offenders on supervision are subject to violation and a possible 6-month prison term. So there already is some sanction available. The next item is a memo
Council,
from
let me stop you there.
Okay.
Just for committee's purposes, I want to point out the second paragraph in that prison impact assessment. According to the LEDs, 2,200 sex offenders have been registered since the requirements established last session. October of 1989. If current requirements continue unchanged, it is projected that 8,500 sex offenders will be registered sex offenders by June 1997. Just to give the committee some, remind the committee of the magnitude of the problem we're dealing with.
I would also just follow up on that this also says if current requirements continue, House Bill 2407, it doubles at least by number the number of offenses. Now, I don't think that the numbers would increase significantly, but they are adding, the bill does propose to add to the list of crimes which would be registrable, which actually is a word. So that number, I think, will even be higher. I know registrable was in my spell check, much to my surprise.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Mason.
What happens if somebody were to get their hands on this information and publish it? What penalty would there be for...
If they were to get their hands on...
On the database and literally publish it.
I'm going to ask Major Renfro to come up
Major
if we could.
Major Renfro, what would be the penalty?
You're not talking about, like, trial lawyers getting this and mailing these lists for... No, that's the accident bill. Never mind.
I'm thinking of perhaps some enterprising, you know, we've got all these TV shows that, kind of...
Major Renfro,
yeah.
What kind of... safeguards are put onto this this registry to make sure that anybody can't walk in and get it and use it for tabloids or whatever?
Chairman Clark, I'm Major Dean Renfro, Oregon State Police Criminal Investigation Division. This information would be in the law enforcement data system. That information is exclusively provided only to law enforcement agencies. And to access that information, you would have to be networked with LEDS, or the law enforcement data system, and be a criminal justice agency by definition. The general public would not have access to it.
But what if somebody did get, the list, a printout, and essentially did a TV show on the, the sex offender in your neighborhood, Channel 3 has learned, and what would be the penalty for that?
First of all, the penalty, if it was obtained unlawfully, let's say, for example, released unlawfully by a law enforcement agency, there are provisions in the criminal statute for that, misdemeanor violations. Of course, expulsion from lawful access into LEDS, and an agency, in fact, having violated a LEDS agreement or contract, could be rejected from further access to the system. As far as the release of that information by the public to, let's say, a television show or whatever, I'm sure that there could be, and I'm not positive, but I believe there could be some civil liability involved. But you have to recall my conversation last week when I mentioned access to public criminal offender information through legal disclosure can be accomplished. For example, if you wanted to get information regarding a specific person's record, you can write the Oregon State Police Bureau of Criminal Identification and obtain that record after a 14-day waiting period. And during that 14-day waiting period, they contact the person to whom the record is requested and give them an opportunity to challenge what's on it. But that can be obtained. But this is in individual cases and not a collective list, per se.
Counsel.
Mr. Chair, Major Renfro, it seemed to me, and I apologize for not recalling this, last session when the House Judiciary Committee dealt with the gun bill and the gun and the registry, at that time the legislature created an additional penalty provision so that if the list that I think is comparable to the list that's imagined here is released, there are additional sanctions in statute. And I'm having trouble putting my finger on them right now, but if there were a situation where a police officer basically unlawfully released them, there are provisions now that deal with the gun registry that address the issue that you're raising.
Okay, see, what I'm afraid of is I can just see somebody going,
And I can't find it, but I know that it is in here.
Chairman Clark, that is a Class A misdemeanor if you do release the information regarding the gun purchases.
So that is a subject that the committee
That is something
discuss.
we could revisit. All right. All right, Counsel, are you finished with your briefing then?
Oh, no.
Okay.
There is the next information is the memo that was done by the House Research Office, basically on two issues. One was, are these registration statutes viewed as penal or not, because in part of the requirement of the Oregon Constitution. The second one has to do with whether or not they were viewed as cruel and unusual punishment. And the memo is fairly self-evident that, in spite of people's gut reactions, in fact, I think they both can be done. There is on the last page of that a list, some samplings of 10 states, and I think that there's probably half the states right now have something similar to this. Ms. Grimm and I only picked out bits and just a handful of states to give the committee some sense of what was going on. And the final piece in your package is something that I drafted as just to raise the subject with the committee. There was some discussion last week about what happened if a person had wanted to somehow be relieved from the duty to register. And there are at least three states, Arkansas, Nevada, California, and now Washington as well, that have relief provisions. So all I did was take bits and pieces of each of those, looked at Oregon statutes that have something similar, which what came to mind was the relief from the gun registration or the gun prohibition, and drafted some options for the committee. I can go through it line by line and share with the committee some options there, but it was just...
Why don't we treat it as one of the issues that we're going to have to deal with, perhaps at the end of the process.
This was just to give the committee something to look at and work off of,
and I appreciate
can share with you what's in the other state statutes.
I appreciate you drafting that, and for the committee's information, I had talked with counsel and sort of suggested that some language would be nice. Representative Mannix.
I was just going to mention, we had the firearms legislation last session, and one of the things we did was we put in a comprehensive restriction against criminals being allowed to possess firearms in Oregon, but we also had an escape clause where you could go into court and apply to, and show that you had actually cleaned up your act and you shouldn't have this disability imposed any further. And I
want to ask...
So this parallels that idea.
I want to ask Vern Fotz and Mary Hoyt to come up and see if, while we're talking about this, have you seen the language of what would be Section 6, relief from the duty to register?
No, we have not.
Can you take... Thank you, Representative Mannix. Give you just a minute to skim that and see if you have any comments.
Same thing out of time.
No, we can do that. Could you
look?
Gun bill.
And I can see your potential.
Do either of you have any immediate reactions to the proposal to give some individuals relief from the registration after court hearing?
Mr. Chair, I don't.
I'm Vern Fotz, Chair of the Board of Parole. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I don't. I know that, and I have looked at both Washington and California, I know that they do have this relief from duty to register, and I think it's a perfectly reasonable addition to anything we have.
All right. Representative Courtney, I'm sorry, I didn't see you sitting there. Would you like to come up? Yeah, you're so quiet. Unusual. Do you have any strong feelings one way or the other about granting individuals relief after a court hearing? Since these are your bills, after all.
I guess, for the sake of being unanimous here, I don't, but I guess I'd almost... I'm of the opinion that they should have to register, and the relief not to register should come after a period of time in which they've been registered.
That's the way.
Is that how it reads? I haven't read it real quickly, so as long as that's in there, I feel much more comfortable. So if that's what we're talking about, then I'm okay. But I'd like to have them demonstrated for a period of time when they were under registration, Mr. Chair, that they can handle this life on the outside or whatever you want to call it.
Right. And, Representative Courtney, I suspect that the committee would even be, or at least I would be, open to having a minimum period of time in there before which the person could not apply, almost like a minimum
Chair,
sentence of some sort.
Mr. Chair, if I may, and I look to the most learned counsel for the direction on this, that...
Which one of us is the most learned counsel?
Well,
I can only talk
about the reference that I developed last session. Most learned counsel was always... staff counsel, but I didn't. That's because I considered myself to be an inferior counsel, this chair. We used 5 years last session, I believe, or something. We came up with that little bill, and I don't know whether or not we also had this same kind of language in there or not. So we made a statement last session that at least 5 years, and I don't know, since you brought it up, Mr. Chair, about this time period, I'm not saying that you want to do that, committee, but we did at least public policy-wise established 5 years last session as to an absolute for something, but maybe that wasn't good public policy. I don't know. I'm trying to get a read from the most high Representative Mason. I can't read him right now, so I'll come back to you, Chair Miller, Clark. God, why am I getting confused? Anyway, that's all I got to say on that point.
There's of us on the committee. We're waiting to hear what our characterization was going to be.
All right. Thank you. Thank you all. All right, counsel, then you're done with your overview.
I am.
All right.
Well, I know I'm not, I guess. committee members ought to have in their file just a memo that was written last time that I didn't recopy that lists some other issues, policy questions that the committee, some decisions that will need to be made. And I think the two primary issues that the committee will be looked to make some decisions are if the person is no longer on parole or probation, to whom should they report? I think that's one issue. And the other is how to handle juvenile offenders.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay. Committee, we got several issues to work through. And let's just take them one by one, and let's start. I suppose the easiest way to do it is section by section in the bill. I can't think of any better way to do it, and then when we get to the end, we'll see what's left over. Representative Mannix.
Well, I was going to inquire of Major Renfro about the idea of saying that let the state police step in when the parole supervision is about to end and have the parole supervision serve as the registration mechanism, but then as parole is evaporating, have the state police pick up with the maintenance of that system. Do you mind if I ask him?
Major Renfro, could you come up again, please? Sorry to play musical chairs with you here. But. Yeah, you might want to stay there for a while.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, as I testified to last week, this would be a perfect opportunity to enlarge upon this program in that a sex offender registration profile system could be developed. And that would include specifics as to the nature of the crime and, let's say, a vehicle that might be involved, witness profiling, such as if the sex offender was attracted to juvenile victims, that type of thing, could be included in a computerized tracking system so that, for example, down in Jackson County, if they had a crime, they could contact whoever had the computer advising that they had a suspect, let's say, for example, Hispanic suspect between 30 and 40 years of age, used a knife, drove a brown vehicle, and its victim was a 10-year-old female. That could be entered into a computerized system and could get back to the particular agency with a candidate list of persons living in, let's say, a geographical area 100 miles around where the particular crime occurred. This would be a tremendous aid, in my opinion, in helping in a proactive way to capture sex offenders. As of now, in the LED system, there is a capability of performing this on a limited basis, but what I'm talking about is increasing the capability to add the profiling with specific details so that, for example, another example might be at a school where someone's loitering around. That information could be put into the computer, and you could develop perhaps a suspect list if that person was not identified, a suspect list from criteria provided by the law enforcement agency reporting that information. So there are endless possibilities regarding a profiling system, a tracking system, well beyond the parole and probation period.
May I follow up on that?
Representative Mannix.
My question would be, would you find it necessary to pick up on the tracking system from the point of conviction? Would that be your preference, or to pick up on the tracking system, say, after someone has completed their period of parole or probation? In other words, allow parole and probation to take care of the registration and supervision, but when they're about to pass someone on to the eternal beyond, that is, someone's leaving your jurisdiction, that they would then have you pick up on the system, or would it be more efficient to have you just have the registration system from point of conviction forward?
It would probably be easier from the point of conviction forward. The problem is, after the parole period, there's a problem with keeping track of change of addresses and that type of thing, and that would, of course, have to be worked out. But the preliminary information at the origin of the conviction is the critical point, I believe. That's where you have to receive the information for forwarding to the central computer. And it would be much more difficult to obtain that after a period of time when the person was on parole or probation.
Thank you.
Major Renfro, I'm struggling a little bit with what you do with this information, or not what you do with it, but what it gets you from a legal standpoint to have this information. If you search your computer and you come up with a set of data that basically says, you know, we're not giving you any, we don't know for sure, but it looks an awful lot like Tom Mason, does that give you probable cause to go arrest Tom Mason, or do you have to make some independent inquiry and establish basically outside of that system that it's Tom Mason?
I believe the computer information would simply be just another tool to assist law enforcement on focusing in a particular area or upon a list of candidates. It certainly would not be the probable cause to arrest someone. It would simply steer aid in steering the law enforcement agency in a particular direction, or provide them with information that seems to match in some respects the suspect profile that they've provided.
I just want to be a little bit careful with, I mean, I guess I'm nervous about massive data banks involving individuals anyway, but I'm less nervous in this circumstance, but I just want to know kind of how it gets used out there. Representative Mason, did you have, I'm sorry, Council.
Yeah.
Representative Mason.
Well, I think Representative Bell had her hand up too a little bit ago, but...
she was watching the trees be blown away.
What Major Renfro has to say is extremely interesting, and I think what he talks about is basic, good basic police work in the 1990s. But I don't know how relevant it is to the bill per se. I remember when I was in the district attorney's office, we had a little thing, things called fur contacts. Remember those? Do we still do those? I don't think we do. Do we?
Yes.
But they were absolutely marvelous. And that was literally every time you contacted someone, you wrote down who they were and the license number and just put it in the computer. And if you were good on the computer, you could come up with a list of, but it did not give you probable cause, but it gave you some great investigative leads. In fact, I think once, I was probably the proudest day in the DA's office, I was able to track down a man who was stolen a driver's license because he had left some valid info on it, an address. But anyway, but I don't know how relevant it is to this bill. I think the bill.
Well, I guess I'm not clear what the council. And then I have a question. Council, go ahead.
I would just have. I mean, I think in part what Major Renfro was talking about, as I understand it, is if there's been a report at a school of a certain character, of a certain individual and certain characteristics, then with the information that they may be able to retrieve, they can take photographs to the children who are reporting and say, do any of these people look like the person you're describing? Does this car look familiar? I don't think that it gives them probable cause to go knock on the door, but it can provide information that they may not otherwise have to help a victim or individuals who are observing a situation identifying. Am I wrong? Is that not correct?
Sure.
Oh, I'm fine. So I think it gives them a sort of the key to the bank, but then they have to get independent verification.
That's what I was
think the word you're looking for is independent verification. Yes, that's the person. Yes, that's the car. Yes, that's the whatever.
Yeah, well, independent verification. That's what I meant.
Although, if I might add, you never need probable cause just to knock on the door.
Door.
Yeah, you can do that anytime you want.
All right. I do have two technical questions.
Chairman Clark.
Major Renfro.
Yes, Chairman Clark. What it is it would just expand a system that would already be in place, in that it would obtain additional information that would be helpful in investigative leads, and it would not establish probable cause.
Okay, I guess what I need to know, either from Representative Mannix or Major Renfro, what's the proposal? I mean, are you working on a motion?
I'm at the point where I would say that I would just as soon propose that the state police be in charge of the registration process, and that they pick up on from the point of conviction, and that it be used in conjunction with the LEDS system. I'm tracking with Major Renfro's
Council
comments.
Has a comment on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, let me just walk you through the bill for a second, and I think that because there's really two pieces to this. Section 2, subsection 1, talks about discharge. parole or probation. And at that point, the language in line 23 talks about the official in charge of supervising the person shall obtain the address where the person shall reside and enter that into the LED system. That is the current system. The committee is going to have to decide if they want to continue that. One of the issues that that Major Renfro has raised was whether or not the description of the offense in line 25 is sufficient or whether or not he wants to expand upon that. The second time that the issue has raised, however, is in line 29 on page 1, where when the person moves, at that point they have an obligation to notify the parole officer, probation officer, which is closest. And so it's really a two-step process. Who do you want them who gets the initial report when the person is being released, and then every time the person subsequently moves, who do you want them? And the bill does handle them separately, and I just want the committee to be clear about that.
My response is to return to the simple concept, and that would require further changes in the current law to say, at point of conviction, this information is provided, it's put into the law enforcement data system, not when they're discharged, paroled, or released. But at the point of conviction, it's put in there that the maintenance of that information, they're going to be under supervision from the parole or probation officer.
Counsel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mann, that's my understanding that information is already, it's already inputted into the LED system. Am I not correct?
Not the expanded registration stuff that Major Renfro's done. Sorry about that.
Yes, basically, there is.